Welcome to Rewind, the book club where we reread old YA books and tell you our unfiltered opinions with lots of wine involved. We're your hosts. I'm Sarah Jones Dittmeyer.
And I'm Emily Cavender.
This is episode one. And
our very first episode.
Our very first episode. We're going to be rereading popular YA books that were very popular when we were in middle school and high school and see if they still hold up and give our tipsy opinions on them.
We have a very, very long list of books that we wanted to do, but naturally, the very first series that we selected had to be the one and only Twilight.
It had to be Twilight.
What else could we have started with, honestly? It's the most notorious.
I don't know if we could have started with anything else, but also I have already been wanting to reread Twilight. There was a lot of Twilight marathons on during the pandemic, so I was kind of like reliving it.
I think the last time I rewatched them was early pandemic, you know, like when we thought this was all going to end.
In like a few weeks.
Yeah, we were like, okay, I'll just be in my apartment for like maybe a month max. I'll rewatch a bunch of old shows. I'll watch the ones I never got around to. And then, of course, I had a Harry Potter, Twilight, and Hunger Games marathon. Like very early.
Around New Year's, one of the movie channels had a Twilight marathon every day.
Amazing, honestly. We love it so much.
Every day. I'm going to take a sip of wine.
Chug. And by chug, I mean take one sip because I can't even chug water.
Probably a good thing. Anyway.
Yeah, probably. What are you drinking today, Sarah?
Oh, that's right. I'm drinking a 2018 Cabernet Sauvignon from Washington.
Oh, I didn't know Substance. I needed to know the year and the...
It was on the label. It was like big letters on the label, so...
Let's see. I don't know how to pronounce mine. I'm pretty sure it's French. I'm not going to say this right. Cote de Roses. It's C-O-T-E. Cote de Roses.
Cool.
Okay, Sarah, tell our friends who you are.
So my name is Sarah Jones Dittmeyer. I am a writer and an actor and a podcaster. Some of you may know me from First Year's Podcast, which is a spoiler-free Harry Potter podcast for adults who are reading the books for the first time. Unlike this podcast, which will be full of spoilers.
So many spoilers.
All the spoilers. I really like fandom stuff. I'm really into Harry Potter, and I was a very big Twilight fan in middle school and high school. I love Outlander. I love all the things.
If there is a fandom, Sarah is in it.
Yeah, 9 times out of 10, that's accurate.
Well, compared to Sarah's like list of accomplishments, like I have nothing to say other than I was on 2 episodes of Sarah's podcast First Years. Yeah, I'm 29. I live in Nashville. I work from home. And I have 3 fur babies. And that's really all there is to know about me.
And she's also the leader of the Wolfstar fan
club. Oh, yes. Rain is sincere forever. Sarah, tell our friends how old you are and where you live.
I am 26. I currently live in New York City.
When the pandemic's over, I'm going to move to New York for a couple weeks. And maybe we can record some podcasts in person.
That would be fun. Anyway. So we're talking about Twilight today. Yes. Emily, what's your first experience with Twilight? How did you become a Twilight fan? Were you a Twilight fan back in the day? How much of a Twilight fan were you?
So I remember that the first 3 books were already out by the time I read the books. I remember having to wait for Breaking Dawn to come out. And I remember the day it came out, I locked myself in my room and didn't come out for 13 hours until I finished it. But I do remember, and I told Sarah I was going to tell the story because it's a classic. So I'm reading Twilight for the very first time. I think I was a sophomore in high school. And I am a theater buff, for those of you who know me, which is none of you. I love theater, and I used to do it when I was a kid. And I was in a production of Cinderella at the time. And I was a dancer, and so I was always like the featured dancing fill in the blank in all of the productions I ever did. In Cinderella, I was a featured dancing or a featured ballroom dancer for the show. And my partner and I were the only ones who had dance experience and the only ones who could keep a beat, really, honestly. And so we were like front and center for the whole waltz scene, which was like a very long extended number while Cinderella's in the background doing whatever. My partner was not there that night. And so they were running all these numbers and I was sitting in the corner with my nose in the Twilight book, like so into it. And then it was like the scene when they first meet James and then James freaks out and we know that everything's about to go to shit. And then they were like, okay, let's run the waltz. And I was like, I can't put my book down right now. Like, you don't understand. James is going to kill Bella. What are we going to do? And they were like, Emily, we're not running. We can't run this without you. Nobody knows the routine. They're all just watching you anyway. My partner wasn't there. So I stood front and center with my book open and did the whole waltz while reading them figuring out what they were going to do to get away from James.
My God.
I'm pretty sure I read like a whole chapter while I was doing a solo waltz because my partner wasn't there. I wasn't going to hold my hands up. So
that's really impressive, actually.
Yeah. That is how deep my love ran. And I was not even finished with the book for the first time. I was so like, I just couldn't put it down. So I didn't. And I brought it with me onto the rehearsal floor and they were not happy with me. But did I do that dance perfectly? Of course I did.
That's all that matters. I used to get yelled at in middle school for like reading like in the hallways and like reading in class, but I'm like, I ace all the quizzes. Why are you, why does it matter?
I definitely got yelled at for in band because I was also a band kid. I had Harry Potter in my lap and I was reading it for like the 12th time. And we were like in rehearsal and they were like, my director was yelling at me and I was like, I played every single note correctly. I have this piece memorized. It's so easy. Leave me be. yeah. So was I a fan of Twilight? Yes. I'm pretty sure that you told me once upon a time that you and your friends all gave yourself nicknames that were Twilight characters.
Yes. Okay. So
I remembered that earlier today and I was like, oh, I'm up on the podcast.
Yeah. Yes. And I was going to bring it up anyway. So I'm glad you remembered.
Oh yeah.
So I was actually the last person in my friend group to read Twilight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was everyone had been telling me about it.
Exactly. Like, so I read it, I believe it was, I want to say it was eighth grade, but it might've been seventh. And I was like the last one to read it. And my friend group, like what we used to do was like every time we all read a series, we would assign each other like characters, right? So my friend Nicole was Alice. And I think Danielle must have been Bella. And I remember really wanting to be Rosalie, but because I was like the last one to read it, Rosalie was already taken. So I think I started out having Tanya as my nickname because she's Strawberry Blonde, but we eventually decided on Bree from Eclipse as my character name, which to this day my friend's uncle, because of the nickname Bree, still to this day calls me Cheese.
Wow, I love that journey for you. Man, I could really go for some cheese with my wine.
Also, did you know, okay, were you into like YouTube when you were younger?
Yes, but I remember you bringing this up the other day. I didn't know there was a Twilight YouTube.
There was a subgenre in YouTube of Twilight YouTube, which there would be... there were several different YouTubers that were actually like Twilight YouTubers that were pretty big within the fandom. And also there were a few channels where each day like they would like, it would be co-hosted by like seven different people. So someone would upload on Sundays, someone would upload on Mondays, et cetera, et cetera.
I definitely watched some channels like that, that were not.
Yes. But like with Twilight YouTube, like I really got to see the entire process of Twilight getting made into a movie. Like these were the people that covered the castings as soon as they came out, that covered like the first photos of the Cullen family when they came out, like had like got to go to the premieres. I remember like getting to see a couple pages of the script ahead of time. Like we really got to see like each part of the movie being made, which I thought was really special.
That's so cool.
But the other nerdy thing that I remembered that I did, so do you remember when it was like really popular to like have cardboard cutouts of people?
Yes.
Like you would get them at Hot Topic or like FYE.
Who did you have?
So I had already owned a Legolas one, but I naturally, yes, I know. Listen, Orlando Bloom was my first ever celebrity crush. But that's a story for another day. I had an Edward Cullen cardboard cutout. And I... okay. I put it at the end of my bed because Edward...
Oh my God. You are a freak.
I told you I was going to lose all my cool points.
I cannot right now. Wow. How old were you when you had a creepy cardboard cutout of Edward Cullen watching you sleep?
I had to have been in middle school at that point. I told you, I was going to lose all my cool in this podcast.
Wow. That is a lot to take in. I can't believe you never told me that before.
I couldn't tell you because I was like, I want your genuine reaction.
That's true.
Yeah, so that's what I did because Edward used to watch Belle asleep, so I would have him literally set up at the end of my bed. I was also the person who, like, after I read Twilight, anytime mushroom ravioli was, like, on a menu at a restaurant, I had to order it.
I remember when I read it this time, I remember that it was ravioli, but I didn't remember that it was mushroom ravioli. And I remember being like, that's weird. I've never seen mushroom ravioli before. But now actually, I really want to eat it.
It's really good, I have to say.
I never liked mushrooms until pretty recently, actually. And now I really want mushroom ravioli. So,
all right, Emily, is Twilight as good as you remember?
So... yes and no. I will say, if we're talking about like quality writing, terrible. If we're talking about like how readable it is, absolutely. Like I told you, I read 50 pages in 30 minutes. Like there is something about this story that is like very timeless, sucks you in, and you can zoom through it because the story itself is just so... that's a good word. Enchanting. That's not a good word. I don't
know. Intriguing.
Intriguing. There's something about this book that makes you not want to put it down. Did 15-year-old me know anything about literature and quality? No. Does 29-year-old me? Yes. And unfortunately, there are some issues. As I was reading today, I would read passages aloud to my roommate. And he just kept telling me, stop, that's terrible. but did I read the whole thing today? Yeah, because I love it. So yes and no.
I would agree with that. Like, I feel like when I pick up Twilight, which I'm going to do, there's a lot of nostalgia behind it. And I care a lot about these characters.
We're invested.
Exactly. Like, I truly care about the characters, but I am currently taking a novel writing class, and a lot of what I've learned in that class, I'm like, wait, this book doesn't do. And especially, I was thinking about this question, like, when you look at the reviews on the back of the book.
Oh, I didn't do that. Let's do that.
It's an Amazon best book of the decade. Best book of the year, propelled by suspense and romance in equal parts. The novel's danger factor skyrockets as the excitement of secret love and hushed affection morphs into a terrifying race to stay alive. This dark romance is gripping. I'm not sure I would say it's the best book of the decade. I don't know if it merits that.
Oh, I'm sorry. It says best book of the decade, ..
So far.
In a much smaller and darker font that is hard to notice.
And I also, I'm not sure I would call it extraordinarily suspenseful.
I mean, it's kind of suspenseful.
But is it extraordinarily suspenseful? I'm not sure.
I don't know. I couldn't put it down and I brought it onto the walls floor. So you tell me, Sarah.
One thing, because the way we're doing these episodes is that we're going to sort of go back and forth between me coming up with questions for you and you coming up with questions for me. So this first episode is my turn to come up with questions for you. Emily, reading it 20 years later, are you Team Edward or are you Team Jacob?
The simple answer is I am and always have been Team Edward.
So you're still Team Edward?
Yes, I am.
Wow. All right. This will be interesting.
Also, for context, this conversation is just about the first Twilight book.
Yes.
Where Jacob is a literal child. He's 15. She is 17. Ew.
I thought he's 16.
Nope. He had just turned 15 because he got in trouble for not being old enough to drive in front of Charlie and he was driving.
Okay. But, all right. When I was reading, like, obviously, when I was a kid, I was Team Edward. Mm-hmm. I think I still came away from this book knowing the entire series, because this is not a spoiler-free book or podcast. I am Team Jacob, currently.
Oh, my God, you flip-flopped.
I did.
Okay, when you ask me this question, when we talk about New Moon, my answer will probably change.
Yeah.
But right now, you're just book one, I'm Team Edward. I still am. Always have been. Except what I used to say when I was a kid is that when I'm reading the books, I'm Team Edward. And when I'm watching the movies, I'm Team Taylor Lautner.
And you and I fight all the time about
everything.
Jacob's best form in the movie.
Shirtless Jacob is the best form.
Sure. Long-haired Jacob in New Moon is the best version of Jacob.
I will never forget being in the theater for the New Moon midnight premiere. And the first time we see him shirtless, he's in the rain and he runs out of the house and it's just pouring.
That's not the first time.
That's not?
No, the first time is when she falls off the motorcycle and he takes off his shirt to dab at her bleeding head.
You're right. Okay, rewind. I will never forget being in the movie theater in the scene when he runs out shirtless and the pouring down rain and the whole theater is catcalling and going and squealing. Like the little girls are squealing. The old drunk 40-year-old girls next to me are catcalling and I'm sitting there fanning my face like, whoo!
So going along with that.
Don't give him a shirt back.
Going along with that, I remember being at the midnight premiere of Twilight, and when Carlyle walks into the room, someone in the theater went, oh, hello.
Adult Emily is Team Carlyle because he is so beautiful. Not in terms of being with Bella, just like
in general.
Everybody else.
That's fair.
I love Carlyle.
That's fair. Adult Sarah is still New Moon, long-haired Jacob. But here's why. I I'm Team Jacob for this book, mainly because I have an entire list of Edward's red flags that we will go over later. My first question to you is, would you buy the whole adopted children thing?
Like if I went to Forks High School?
Yes.
So, okay. So the official story is that they adopted Edward, Alice, and Emmett. And then Rosalie and Jasper are their foster kids, and they are twins because they're blonde, obviously.
Right.
So.
But that they've been with them since they were like 7 or 8.
Yeah. I mean, knowing who I am as a person, I am very suspicious. I love to tell stories of my childhood. My parents would try to surprise me with things. Or when I found out Santa Claus wasn't real, I was very young.
He's not?
Sorry. I was like five or six years old when I found out Santa wasn't real, because I am so suspicious of everything. And honestly, it ties back to my anxiety, and I am an Enneagram 6.
I was going to say, do you have trust issues?
I have trust issues. I have all the issues. We're suspicious beings, and I question everything around me always, and I don't believe people until like I'm proven that I'm wrong, because it's very hard for me to trust other people when I see things that don't make sense. So me, like, I probably would not have bought it, and then Edward would have read it in my mind and they would have moved.
Because I looked into how old Esme is, and she's like frozen at 26.
Mm-hmm.
So like if they're 17, that means like she adopted them when she was like 16.
Well, we don't know when she got the kids with the Cullen last name, but Rosalie and Jasper Hale are the ones they specified had been with them forever.
But still, that means she, like, I'm sure they're telling everybody, like, oh, Esme's, like, 30-something.
Yeah, so it's been, like, 10 years. So, yeah, 16 to 20. But they did say that they were her, like, nieces and nephews. So it's not as weird to take in a kid really young when they're family. So I feel like because they're family, it would be like, oh, it makes more sense for her to take in her niece and her nephew when they were little, even if she was kind of young herself, so they don't end up in the system. And then maybe she and Carlisle get married really young, and they realize they have a passion for taking care of foster kids and adopting and
matchmaking.
Yeah. I've always thought it would be really cool. I mean, I don't want kids, but if I ever had kids, I always said, like, if I was rich, I would adopt a bunch of like 16 and 17 year old kids, because no one ever adopts them. So maybe that's what their story is, you know? Mm-hmm. They adopted them when they were a little bit older. So even though they're not super old themselves as parents, like, it could kind of make sense. Then you throw in the fact that they're all dating each other. Weird. Inappropriate. Little high school Emily, who was very sheltered and thought that all of these things were sinful. I would be like, I cannot believe they are living in the same house as a person they are dating. Like, so inappropriate.
So bottom line, you wouldn't really buy it.
Yeah, bottom line, I don't think I'd buy it. Final answer.
Okay. My next question is, and I don't mean this in an insensitive way, but it's like,
Where is this going?
I can't help but laugh because it's Twilight and it's just the way it's written. Is Bella just like a loner, or is she like actually depressed?
No, she's definitely depressed. I think Phoenix Bella before the book starts, like, she was happy. She, like, there was no indication that she was depressed in Phoenix. Like, she said that she didn't really get along with her peers, but her mom was her best friend. And she loved Phoenix, and she was so sad to leave. So I think even though she didn't have a lot of friends, she was probably more of just, like, a loner. But then the moment she decides that she's moving to Forks and is sacrificing herself, I think she was depressed. Until she met a man who fixed everything.
Right, because she's like, she's so dramatic about everything. And, mm-hmm. which is like half of the quotes that are in my red flags list. And she becomes like so attached to Edward. So dependent. And just doesn't have time for anybody else. But also, like, she's just like, like one of the things I realized was that like when we're reading this book, like we don't really get a sense of like conflict in the beginning, right? Like mm-hmm. the only thing we really see that possibly could be conflict is, oh, Bella has a hard time fitting in and making friends. And I think that's a conflict that we all can relate to, right?
Yeah.
But she doesn't really, we don't see her struggle with it because she's just
everyone
not,
there is obsessed with her and they all want to be her friend.
But like she hates it.
Yeah, she hates it. Like that's the struggle. It's not that no one wants to be her friend. It's that everyone wants to be her friend and she doesn't want the attention.
Right, but it's like if you're really struggling to make friends and you're moving into this new place and this guy named Mike Newton is like trying to help you out and walking you to class, like you don't have to be like mean about it. Like she and Edward are both like very kind of mean to the people around them, I've noticed. Like she finds Mike annoying because he's like always there and he's probably just like, this girl is new and like, yeah, he probably is a crush on her, but he's also probably like, let me show her around because like she won't know how to get around the school.
Yeah. And I remember reading like, so he had asked her to go to the dance and she said, no, go with Jessica. So he asked Jessica. And then when she and Edward started hanging out, he asked her one day if she was dating him. And it was like, she snapped back at him. That's none of your business. Bitch, this is high school. Like, I will never forget my first boyfriend, literally the very first day at school after we were together and we were holding hands in the hallway. Everyone was asking me if I was dating him, including like the popular girls who would never talk to me normally were like, oh my God, are you dating him? Like, of course people are going to ask you if you're dating a guy,
right?
Especially Edward, who was like very like considered above everyone else. Like all the girls wanted him and he said no to anyone who tried. And then the new girl starts dating him and he's paying attention to her. Like, yeah, people are going to ask you about it.
Right.
You don't have to bite his head off.
Exactly. The same thing with like when Charlie gets home and he's like, Bella. And she's like, who else? And it's like, that's a normal thing to say when you walk through the door. Like,
oh my God. If I said that to my father, he would have like ripped me a new one. Like, maybe that's just the Southern girl in me. But if my father was like, Emily, are you here? And I was like, who else? He would be like, this is my house. Like that. No, the correct answer is yes, sir. I'm in the living room.
But even so, like, I feel like it's natural to be like, yeah, you know, like I'm here. Mm-hmm. And like, also, like, with Edward not being very nice to people, like, he talked, like, this is a direct quote. I wasn't used to having to go to such circuitous measures, listening to your words in Jessica's mind. Her mind isn't very original, and it was annoying to have to stoop to that.
I remember reading that, and I was like, damn, Edward, she's a 17-year-old girl.
Like, it's just not nice. They're just not nice, like, to other people.
Oh my God, you know what they are? This is before, honestly, when this came out, this is before this term was coined, but they're like hipsters. They're like, I'm so much better than all these normal people. I'm better and I'm different and I'll just never fit in because I'm cool. Edward right. is a hipster. He's the original Edward, hipster.
The OG hipster.
Yes.
Next question, and this isn't really a serious question, but I did think about it. Why does it take an entire gym class to go over the badminton rules?
I didn't notice that. Okay, so she goes to gym.
Not just one class, but like they have leftover time so that they're going to have to finish up the badminton rules in the next class.
Yeah, so like to set the scene, she goes to gym class and she's excited that volleyball's over, but they're learning badminton. And it takes a whole class period and a half for this teacher to teach them the rules. Like, I remember being in high school and taking a gym class, and they're like, we're playing badminton now. Here's 30-second rundown. Get on the courts. Like,
I know. And I remember actually really enjoying badminton, like, in gym class. That was probably one of my favorite units.
The whole point of gym is, like, be active. They're not going to waste a class period and a half of you sitting on your ass when the whole point
right,
is
especially
you
because you just went over volleyball and badminton are essentially the same.
One of them has a racket and one of them you use your hands, but otherwise it's the same fucking sport. I don't know that I would even consider badminton a sport, to be honest. Volleyball is definitely a sport, but
I have a theory for sports is like if it gets your heart rate up, then yeah, it's a sport. So like I can see why badminton would be a sport because it's very similar to like tennis. It's just
but the
like
court is just so small,
right? But you get your like okay. Would you say badminton is like less of a sport than golf?
No, golf is not a sport.
It's not a sport.
It's an activity.
It's a hobby.
Yeah, it's a hobby.
All right. So our second check-in, and I know we have a lot to talk about because we started to fight over text over this. And then I was like, no, let's save it for the podcast. How are you feeling about Rosalie?
Rosalie is a bitch. The end.
I like Rosalie.
There is not a single redeeming quality about Rosalie so far in the series. Book one, she exists to be mean. That's it.
I agree with that. But at the same time, I fully understand why she's so angry and she just doesn't want her family to, like, die. Like, I feel like she blames Bella and she's like, fuck you, Bella, and fuck you, Edward, because like this goes badly. Like we all have to like uproot our lives and fuck you. I don't want to move.
Okay. I think that's justified. That argument if Alice wasn't a fucking psychic. They all know the way this is going to end.
They don't know because if you read Midnight Sun, which spoiler alert, we're going to go over.
I actually haven't finished it yet. I read the first
one. I have not finished it either. But Alice has a vision. And it's either Bella gets murdered or Bella gets turned into a vampire. They don't know which one happens yet.
Okay, but they have this whole conversation about, I would never bet against Alice. And Alice says...
But Alice sees both.
She sees both, but she says she's going to be a vampire one day. She's like, both of these are possible, but I know this is going to happen. And the ending of the first book, like the final chapter before the epilogue, is she's like literally passing out on drugs and she goes... I'll never bet against Alice. Rosalie bet against Alice.
But I understand why she would. Like, I feel a lot of empathy for Rosalie. I also feel a kinship with Rosalie because Emmett, I had a huge crush on, still do.
Emmett deserved better than Rosalie.
Okay, but here's my thing. Actually, here's my thing, though. Like, because of the way Stephanie Meyer has written Rosalie, where she does seem like a one-note bitch, there has to be so much more there as to why Emmett is with her. And I like give me that extra content, please. Like write a whole other book on like how Rosalie and Emmett fall in love, because there has to be something there for him to stay with her for as long as they have.
I need a book about the lost decade. Edward later mentions that after Emmett and Rosalie first got together, they couldn't stand to be within miles of them for like a whole decade. Yeah. I want to know about that.
I want all the Emmett and Rosalie content. I really do, because I think there is a story there and I think it's probably very intriguing. And I think they have to love each other if they're together for as long as they have been.
I mean, I think it would be nice to know more about why he loves her so much. But like, if I was going to get bonus content of another couple, they would be at the bottom of my list. Give me Alice and Jasper.
I mean,
Esme and Carlisle. I would even take Jacob and I can't think of a funny Renaissance nickname for Renesmee.
Renaissance.
There's another one that's like a math word that was my favorite when I heard it. And I'm drunk enough that I can't remember what it is.
But anyway, I just feel like that has to be proof that Rosalie can't just be a one note bitch. Like,
true. At this point in the series, though, she is.
I get that.
And, like, the only explanation we're given is that she's jealous because when they turned her, it was with the intention of her and Edward being together. Neither one of them wanted to be with the other, but she's still jealous of Bella for being with Edward. That is some mean
girl I don't think that's why she's jealous of Bella. I think, especially what we see in Breaking Dawn, I think she's jealous of Bella being human.
I mean, yeah, there's also that. Which is dumb.
I think Rosalie like deeply cares about her family, and I think she just like
does she?
I think she does.
I think she cares about herself, and I think she cares about Emmett, and Emmett cares about everyone else. So Rosalie's forced to go.
This is why I want Rosalie and Emmett content.
I don't know. Like,
give me all the answers, please.
In this book, so when the bad guys show up and they're like, "What's our plan? We got to get away." Edward asks Rosalie to switch clothes with Bella so that they can throw off the scent, and she said, "Why?"
I know.
She didn't even want to help save and her also, life.
On the flip side of that, Bella says, quote, "If something happens to any of them, Carlisle, Emmett, Edward, if that wild female hurts Esme," and she doesn't mention Rosalie at all.
Everyone except for Rosalie, because up until this point, Rosalie's never talked to her. Yeah. Everyone else has talked to her except for Rosalie. You know why?
All right, so you're
Rosalie is a bitch.
So you're team Edward, but not team Rosalie, and I am team Jacob and team Rosalie.
What am I if I'm not team Rosalie? Because I'm certainly not team Bella. Bella is trash.
Okay, I also, going along with Bella, actually, the use of "I love you" in this book.
Yes.
Those are very powerful words. And I feel like they just aren't used properly in this book.
Correct. I was hoping you were going to bring this up because I'm reading this today. They have 1.5 dates before they're telling each other they're in love with each other. Mm-hmm. They've known each other for, I think that they implied close to like 6 weeks, but he didn't speak to her for 6 of those weeks. They sat next to each other in biology saying nothing for 6 weeks. He saves her in Port Angeles, Angeles, whatever it is. He saves her life and they have dinner and he drives her home. So that's like a half hangout. Then they make plans to go to Seattle, which then they scrap the plan and go to that clearing. And he shows her what he looks like in the sun for the first time. And in that clearing, he says that he loves her. And she goes home that day and is that infamous quote on the back of the book. In third, I was unconditionally and irrevocably in love with him. And I'm like, bitch, you have hung out with him 2 times. They haven't even had like real conversations, because it's only after that point that they start really asking each other questions. And then he spends 2 days asking her every question under the sun and getting to know her, which is something you do before you fall in love with someone.
Yes.
Like, I was thinking to myself, like, my ex-boyfriend, my ex-boyfriend and I were together for close to 1.5 years before I said I loved him. Like, not 2 dates.
No, exactly. And like, I almost wonder if maybe, because we know Edward has never been with anybody before.
Yeah. Bitch is a virgin and he's never had a girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly. So like in his time, if he were going to be with somebody, like he'd be courting them. Mm-hmm. And like, maybe like back then, like, you know, a lot of people didn't marry for love, but also like, I think love was like sort of a different concept than it is now. So maybe Edward is like, oh my God, like, is this love? I think it is, because I like, you know, I'm so intrigued with this human. But it's not.
Yeah, like, I guess I could understand it from Edward's point of view. Like, he was born in 1901. Yes. It was a different time. Bella, on the other hand, also a virgin, never had a boyfriend, never kissed anyone. Kisses him for the first time and literally sexually assaults him. Like, both of these two little virgin babies who don't know anything about relationships hang out 2 times and are like, I'm in love with you forever.
Exactly. And it's like,
for you.
Exactly. I was just about to say that. It's not just like, I love you. It's, oh my God, I cannot be apart from you ever.
And I will risk the lives of my entire family to be with you.
Not just that, but I will also like put all of my relationships with other people at risk because I love you so much.
Yeah. His sister, Rosalie, bitch, is telling him not to be with her, and he's like ignoring what his sister is saying to him, And it's not like the normal terms of a sister. Like if my sister told me she didn't like a guy, I'd be like, whatever. Their bond and their family is way deeper than like a normal family relationship. Mm-hmm. Like they know everything about each other. Like they say there's no secrets because Edward can read minds. Alice can see the future. There's no secrets in this family. And this person who you've known for like 100-ish years is telling you that this is a bad idea. And he's like, back the fuck up. I hang out with her 2 times and I love her. You don't understand me, mom. Like, it's some middle school bullshit.
It was really
Stephanie is. Was Meyer single when she wrote this or was she married?
I think she had to have been married.
Was he her high school sweetheart? Like, does she not understand how relationships work?
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing is like, it really doesn't make sense. And I feel like having this, like, I love you, that's like so quick and also just like doesn't mean what it's like it means in reality, like sets people yeah. up for like disappointment and like expectations that like aren't met and like, I don't know, like, and unhealthy expectations it like gives people, you know?
Bella and Edward, unhealthy? No. What are you talking about?
We'll go over those red flags. But also, okay, here's another thing. And I feel like we've talked about this before, the concept of fate. So they talk a lot about how Bella has like used up her 9 lives and it's Edward's job to keep her alive. So my question is like, do we think that's actually true? Like, because they say that her number was up like first when he met her and then when the van almost crashed into her and then that creepy group of guys in Port Angeles. Like, I think fate does play into this book a lot, but like, do we think it's like actually true that her number has been up?
I mean, I feel like if she was meant to die, she would have fucking died. Like, I feel like this ties into Edward's whole like obsession. Like at the end of the book, when she wants to be a vampire and he's telling her no. And he was talking about how he's like, he won't doom her to this fate. He was saying, none of this would have happened if I didn't exist and I'm not supposed to exist. You do though. And if you weren't supposed to, like you wouldn't. Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like he's so, what's the vampire equivalent of internalized homophobia? That's what Edward has. And I feel like yeah. he blames a lot of what happens on like all this stuff that's not supposed to exist and he's going to hell and all this shit. And I'm like, okay, if you weren't supposed to exist, you wouldn't. If Bella was supposed to be dead, she would be, but she's not. So
her number wasn't up.
No.
These were just like, this is just Bella being like accident prone.
Yes. What is the phobia of vampires? I'm Googling this because it's the equivalent of internalized homophobia. Sanguivorophobia. He has internalized sanguivorophobia that is making him hate himself so much, which honestly I feel like is the actual theme of Twilight. It's like, number one, Edward and Bella love each other. 1A, Edward hates himself. Like, that's the theme of the book. And so does Jacob.
And
Jacob hates Edward too.
All right, so we know in this book that Edward can't read Bella's mind, right?
Yes.
They talk about her mind working in a different way, that she's like AM instead of FM. We don't really get an answer to that in this series. It's just kind of that she is immune to all these powers.
I mean, we kind of get an answer in Breaking Dawn.
Do we?
Yeah, it's because like in this series, like
she's a shield.
She's a shield and she's like destined to be a vampire. But
we don't know why she's a shield. Well,
in this book, Carlisle says people take their like natural gifts and talents when they're a human.
So what's Bella's natural gift of being a shield?
Like that she's very private, I guess. I don't know.
Like, I guess that's my question, because I think in Midnight Sun, like he can't really read Charlie's mind either. So
really?
Like, Yeah, like I think like Charlie's thoughts are like slightly more muffled. Like he can't read Bella at all, but he has like a hard time reading Charlie's mind.
Oh, I didn't get that far.
So
interesting.
Like, is it just like, I don't know, like besides it being a plot device to make the plot interesting.
I don't know. Honestly, just a MacGuffin. I feel like the only reason why Edward loves Bella is that he can't read her thoughts. I said it.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably true. And I remember talking to you while I was rereading this and like, I would hate to date Edward. Like he would just think I was like the most insane person being able to read my thoughts all day. Like, would you want to date Edward if he could read your mind? I wouldn't.
If he could read my mind, he wouldn't date me. That's why I said, like, he's never dated anyone before. Like, he's making fun of Jessica's brain for being not very original. When you can hear everyone's thoughts, like, it's boring. There's no excitement. There's no intrigue. Like, you think about when you first start dating someone, and half of your, like, attraction is, like, oh, I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder what he likes. And, like, trying to figure each other out is half the fun. And when you can read someone's fucking brain, like, you're not going to want to date them because there's nothing exciting. And then for the first time in, like, 90 years, because I don't – when did this book come out? 80 years, 70 years since he's been a vampire at this point? He finally meets someone who we can't read their brain, and he's like, I must know everything about you. I love you so much. If he could hear her brain, he wouldn't be that intrigued by her.
All right. So Edward says, don't go into the woods alone. I'm not always the most dangerous thing out there. You know, my first question was, what does he mean by this?
Okay, so that happened like the day after she went off into the woods without telling anyone where she was going, without knowing the woods at all, and just like walked for hours and then sat down somewhere and was like, I think Edward is a vampire. And obviously he was watching her because he's a fucking stalker. And he tells her not to do it anymore. I think number one, it's like there could be other vampires around who are not vegetarians and will eat you. But also, you're an extremely accident-prone human who could just, like, fall and break an ankle. There's bears, there's wolves, other, like, predatory animals could attack you. But I think in the moment, he was probably referring to, like, other vampires.
Okay. Because when I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, I wonder if Sam has already changed into a werewolf yet.
So
I don't really know the timeline of Sam turning into a werewolf.
So when New Moon, when Bella and Edward start hanging out, he makes it sound like it's been happening the last like couple months. But she also like waited a few months after Edward left before she started hanging out with Jacob. So it's probably sometime around the beginning of New Moon that he turns.
Okay. That's what I was thinking, because I was like, because my first thought was like, what does he mean? Because werewolves aren't in this book yet. But, you know, we don't really know when Sam, yeah, but we don't really know when Sam is, you know, when he changes initially.
More on that in episode 2.
Yeah. Or episode 3, if we divide this.
More on that on the episode where we talk about New Moon. Whatever number it happens to be.
Yeah. Okay. My next question is, it's the scene where they're watching a movie in class. Mm. And it says, quote, I was stunned by the unexpected electricity that flowed through me. Amazed that it was possible to be more aware of him than I already was. A crazy impulse to reach over and touch him. To stroke his perfect face just once in the darkness nearly overwhelmed me, unquote. Both she and Edward have this like weird moment where like the lights go off, this movie's playing, and they're both like, holy shit, I want to touch you. Mm-hmm. What do we make of this moment? Like, what is this moment? What is it about this time and place that makes them both feel like they're in the middle of what? Like biology class?
Yes.
So what is it about biology class movie lights off that makes them like experience this weird sensation?
Honestly, the electricity is sexual tension. Let's be real. The end. That's my answer.
But But what's your justification for like biology class, like lights off movie happening?
When you're with someone you're attracted to, especially like early days before you take your relationship to a physical level, like you can literally feel sexual tension between two people. It reminds me of me and my ex-boyfriend when I was a wee tot, and by tot, I mean, that's like 18. So like you're with someone and when the lights go off, that automatically is like, ooh, no one can see what's happening. And like the movie turned on, and I don't think it was about the movie. I think it was just about them being in close proximity to one another in the dark for the first time. And they were like, attraction.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I guess I was just like, why does it have to be like why now? Like, why not before?
Well, at this point, like, the only time they're together is in biology class. So, of course it happened but there.
Why not, like, when he drives her home from Port Angeles?
Because they weren't sitting in the dark silently. Like, they were talking, and he was very upset, and he wanted to go murder all those rapists. Like, it was not about them in that moment. Mm-hmm. It was about other things.
That's fair. Okay. My last question for you before we get into red flags and other things that I wanted to talk about is Alice's visions. Why didn't Alice see Bella escaping from them? Because she does see Bella in a vision on page 434, but she doesn't do anything to stop Bella from leaving.
So they were talking, I remember reading, where Bella sat there and had this whole conversation with her about like, how did your visions work, to like try to figure out how she was going to escape from that.
Right.
She realized that it's like when you make a decision, like that's when the future changes.
Right.
And she said that Alice was so focused on James's decisions, not anyone else's, that she saw the future of Bella ending up in that ballet studio with him and her potentially dying. But she didn't see Bella running away, because all she was thinking about was James's decisions and what was going to happen with James. And so she didn't realize, like, there was a line where she said something like, she doesn't know that it's because of I'm betraying them. Like, she thinks that James decided something that's going to change the way this is all going to end up, where Bella could potentially die.
Yeah.
But I feel like if they weren't on high alert, like if it was a normal day, and Alice was like scanning all of the people that she cares about, she would have been like, excuse you, ma'am.
It's like, I know, because I feel like Alice like definitely should have seen that coming.
Yeah, but like, all she was focusing on was like her satellite was tuned.
So do you think Alice's visions work in a way where like she can sort of tap into them versus them just like coming to her?
I think they come to her, but I think she can focus on like the who.
Okay.
Like, we'll see in Eclipse, she's very focused on the newborn vampire group and Victoria, and, like, she's honed in on their decisions. And then, like, in New Moon, she's honed in on Bella and Edward, trying to keep an eye on them set while they're separated. And I think it's, this is a terrible analogy. I very recently rewatched Smallville. About Superman, which I love, and when he's first learning like to use his powers, where he's like super hearing, he can hear everyone's thoughts, but he can focus in on specific people. I think her visions are probably the same way, where like she could see visions about anyone she's close to, but they also specify that it's easier with non-humans, so like it's easier for her to see things about a vampire than Bella, and she doesn't know Bella as well yet. She knows they're going to be best friends, but they're not quite there yet. And so like she has tuned her radio specifically to James's channel and is looking for those. Cause like it never occurred to her that like Bella would do something.
Yeah. It's interesting also though that like Bella's immune to like every power except for Alice's.
Was there anybody else that she, no, Jasper has Jasper's power.
Yeah. So like, wait, okay. Is this like a big inconsistency then?
It's the mental powers. So like Edward can't read her mind. Arrow can't read her mind. The pain powers, it's like they're accessing part of their brain that triggers the pain, you know?
I didn't think about Whereas, that. Whereas, like,
I mean, Alice is, like, is kind of mental, but also not. Like, she can see what's going to happen to her, so that's, like, a physical right. thing. And Jasper can control the way she's feeling. But I think it's just specifically the things that have to do with her brain
mm-hmm.
are the ones that don't work on her. Well, because then, like, the Amazonians, they are able to, like, change what she can see. Remember? Like, they were, like, using that. And she could, like, see all kinds of crazy shit because that's about her sight. But if it comes to, like, the way she thinks and, like, seeing into her brain, I think, or the way her brain is working, I don't know. Well, then the Amazonian one is kind of the plot hole there. But, like, the other ones make more sense to me for them to draw the line there. Which then is just, like, more water in the argument. Not more water. What am I trying to say? It's just more weight in the argument that Alice isn't looking at what she's thinking and her decisions changing the future, but she still sees mm-hmm. what happens to her. But right. she doesn't know why, because she's not, like, in Bella's brain.
Mm-hmm.
She's just, like, seeing the consequences.
Yeah. Okay. Should we get into the other things that I just want to touch on? They're not really yes. questions. They're just things that I just, like, was, like...
Things we need to talk about.
laying the groundwork for Breaking Dawn. Bella says, I did wonder about you and me someday. And Edward's like, I don't think that would be possible for us.
Oh, we're talking about sex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she's asking about, like, Rosalie and Emmett's marriage and if it's, like...
Yeah, she's like, do vampires normal. Have sex?
I also just feel like that's, like, a... I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's... speaks to, like, the immaturity of their relationship as well, where it's, like, you know, sexual I conversations mean, between you and your partner, like, are more in depth and, like, not just, like, you know.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like as a human being, sex is a part of relationships, right? So, like, if you're dating someone who's not a human being, one of my first thoughts is going to be like, can we fuck one day or no? Like, is this going to be like an asexual thing where, like, we're romantically involved, but nothing ever happens between us physically? Cause like, that's important in a relationship. So I feel like high school Emily never would have brought that up because sex is a sin if you're not married, but adult Emily, like, yeah, if I started dating something that wasn't human, I would be like, can we fuck or no? Like, I'm not going to invest my heart in something if I'm not going to get the other benefits of a relationship, you know? So, I don't know.
But she does put the foreshadow, like, she builds the groundwork and puts the foreshadow there for Breaking Dawn, is really what I got out of this moment.
Yeah. I also, but, like, speaking to, like, the immaturity of the moment, like, yeah, like, sweet, sweet baby Bella is, like, afraid to say the word sex. And she's, like,
yeah, I think, like, I think what I meant by immaturity is that, like, with, like, more mature people who are, like, in a relationship, like, you're not just going to be, like, the conversation isn't going to stop after, like, can we have sex? Yeah. Like, you're going to have more of a conversation and stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Like, there's so, like, it's not just, like, are we having it or not? It's, like, are we having it and how are we having it? And what do you like? And what do I like? And where exactly. do our needs
That was more of my point. Up?
Yeah, yeah. But both of these stupid little virgins don't know any better. And he's, like, I don't want to bash your skull in, so let's probably not have sex. And for now, Bella's okay.
Edward, that's the least of your worries.
Yeah. If only you knew. Give it another year and a half, sir.
Okay, those are all the things I wanted to go over. Should I just, like, blow through my list of, like, red flags?
Yeah, this is a segment we like to call Red Flags of Edward Cullen. Lay it on me, Sarah.
These are just direct quotes. All right, you ready?
I'll just give you my impression as you go.
I could have let you go with Jessica and Angela, but I was afraid if you left me alone, I would go looking for them.
AKA the time Edward admits that he wants to murder someone.
And using her as an excuse to have self-control instead of just having it.
Yeah. It is fully your responsibility to distract me, or I will commit murder and it will be your fault.
I didn't want him to talk about goodbyes anymore. If I had to, I supposed I could purposefully put myself in danger to keep him close.
I don't remember that quote.
AKA all of New Moon. I leaned back, stunned, and though I'd never admit it to him, frightened by his reaction.
Is that in the meadow?
I think so.
Yeah, there are several times in this book when Edward is like, are you afraid of me? And she's like, no. And sometimes she's telling the truth, but sometimes she's just like baldly lying to him. And I'm like, ma'am, it is not healthy for your relationship to continue to lie about the way things make you feel. Trust me, been there, done that, my entire college relationship. If you feel something and they're asking you how you feel, you tell them the truth. Don't suppress.
I intuitively knew, and sensed he did too, that tomorrow would be pivotal. Our relationship couldn't continue to balance as it did on the point of a knife. We would fall off one edge or the other, depending entirely upon his decision or instincts. My decision was made, and I was committed to seeing it through, because there was nothing more terrifying to me, more excruciating than the thought of turning away from him. It was an impossibility.
My whole life will be over if he ever leaves me. My entire identity is defined by a man.
Please forgive me. I can control myself. You caught me off guard, but I'm on my best behavior now.
Is that when they're in the meadow and she got too close to his face and he freaked out and ran away?
Yes.
Shouldn't you already have been on your best behavior, sir?
Yes. I couldn't resist him in anything, which I think is the worst one.
If you are not in control of your body and your decisions, it's a sign that the relationship is unhealthy. The more drunk I get, the more I sing.
Okay, here we go. This is after James and Co. turn up. It is partially your fault. If you didn't smell so good, he wouldn't have cared.
That's so victim blamey. That's literally the vampire equivalent of, well, if you were wearing a longer skirt, they wouldn't have attacked you.
Exactly.
Like, you were asking for it because your blood smells so good.
Also, Edward, you were the one who decided to not leave with Bella when Alice saw them coming.
No, it was Carlisle's choice. They were like,
no, isn't he like, doing? Oh, there's 5 minutes. Like, can you get back? Can you get away in time? And I think he says no.
No, they say, how far out are they? And Edward says 5 minutes. And Carlisle says, let's keep playing. Act like it's normal. I read this. I thought
someone was
ago.
Like, oh, can you make it? Doesn't he ask, can you make it? And he says no.
Well, he says not before, like, they couldn't get all the way home before they showed up.
You can't tell me that Edward couldn't get her far enough away from them in 5 minutes.
Well, far enough away that they wouldn't catch the scent is the issue.
But the whole reason that James goes after Bella is because they're all protective of her. Like, if he just happened to smell her, like, he probably never would have gone after her.
Well, they don't know that yet. All they know is that there's vampires showing up, and they're like, can you get away before these vampires smell Bella? The answer is no.
Why didn't they just all run away?
Huh?
Why didn't they just all run away?
Because then they would have followed them. Like, the question is, can you get away and far enough away that they won't smell that you have a human with you? No, they're going to smell and they're going
to follow. So the answer to that is just to stay with the human as close to the vampires as possible.
That was Carlisle's decision.
It doesn't make sense.
No, it does not. But that's not an Edward red flag. That's a Carlisle red flag.
And the Edward red flag is it is partially your fault.
The Edward red flag is you should have known this was going to happen eventually because you're a vampire dating a human.
Here's another one. I was going to hurt him and I couldn't say goodbye. I let the waves of torture wash over me, have their way for a time. that I pushed them back to and went to face Alice.
That's a Bella quote, not an Edward quote.
Yes, but the fact that she's like, I let the waves of torture wash over me.
It's because she knows she's going to do something that's going to hurt Edward. She's
codependent. They're both codependent, and it's not okay. No, she's like,
I'm going to go to my death, and that's going to be painful for him. And I'm going to let myself feel that pain, and then I'm going to push it down so Jasper and Alice don't know.
It's not healthy.
Yeah, but that's not an Edward problem. That's a Bella problem.
It is.
Edward. That's Bella.
Oh.
The longer I talk, the less sense I'm going to make.
We're almost done. She'll be unavailable every night as far as anyone besides myself is concerned.
Okay, so Bella and Edward are going to prom, and then Tyler shows up at Bella's house because he assumed he was taking Bella to prom, even though he never told her or officially asked her to prom or made any prom plans with her. They literally, like, he asked her to go to the girls' choice dance, and she said no. And he was like, it's okay, we have prom. And then they never speak about it again. And he still shows up at her house to pick her up to go to prom. That is, like, peak male privilege. It makes me sick. And then Charlie thinks it's hilarious and calls Edward. And he's like, LOL, this dude came to pick up Bella. And he's like, hand me the phone. And then he's like, hey, Tyler, I have plans with Bella for the rest of eternity, and no one else will ever have plans with her because I own her social calendar. Bye.
Yep.
It was like such a fun moment. And then when he said that, I was like, excuse me, sir. If she wants to hang out with someone else, she can.
She can. She's allowed. She's allowed to do that.
Yeah. You don't
also own like, her. Also, like, we also see that when, like, after she faints, like, when they're blood typing in class. And he just, like, drags her to his car.
Like, he was trying to take care of her, at least, in that
scenario. Yes, but
she was faint and wanted to drive home. And he was like, you're absolutely not healthy enough to drive.
That doesn't give you an excuse to, like, so manhandle her. So he kidnapped her
and drove her home himself. Oh, God. It's so bad.
Is there anything else you wanted to go over with this book?
I mean, here's my summary of Twilight.
Are you doing Last Call?
No. I love Twilight so much. I do not think it is quality writing. I am fully aware of how problematic it is in essentially every way possible. But it is such a fun read, and there's so much nostalgia attached to it because, you know, you read it in such like a formative time in your life. Like, I think I was 15 when I was, or 14 when I was reading this, and I will always have a very soft spot in my heart for Twilight, despite the fact that it's terrible.
I agree with that. I mean, I think, yeah, it's like it holds so much nostalgia that you can, like, you know, you can hate on it all you want, but also just, like, when there's a movie marathon on, watch it all day.
Yeah.
I feel like you know?
If Twilight came out, like, the first book was released right now, I think I would have a lot of problems with it. And I think
of course.
I would be like, this is stupid and you shouldn't read it. And as a feminist, this is putting us back another decade. You know, like, I would, like, as an adult, I would be like, absolutely not. But I just loved it so much. I'll never forget when I was in college, the one year we did, like, a beach trip, spring break. We didn't do it like normal. We didn't go to PCB and party. We went to Destin. We rented a beautiful house with a private beach area for the neighborhood. And I brought the entire Twilight series because when I was faced with a beach vacation and all I wanted to do was read a book on the sand and get some sun and have some cocktails, the perfect book series for that is Twilight. I read the whole book series in 5 days, laying on the beach. Like, I love Twilight because you don't have to use your brain when you read it. It's just fun, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I love it for that. No one's going to nominate this for a Pulitzer Prize, you know, but it's just like pure fun.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, and I think we're totally allowed to have things that we like about book series that aren't like quote unquote high quality, whatever,
yeah.
You know, that means, you know, there's a reason that beach reads are a whole genre in and of themselves. But I think we can also like enjoy it as a guilty pleasure and yeah. also read it critically and be like, this is not a healthy relationship and this shouldn't mm-hmm. be used as an example of what I want.
Yeah. Like I'm allowed to read a classic one day and a trashy beach novel the next day, you know, like we should be able to enjoy things that aren't considered high quality. Man, I've had some friends in my life who only wanted to read classic literature and things that were given the highest accolades. They would only watch period dramas and historical fiction. And like, yes, those things can be fun, but like you also deserve a chance to like escape reality, shut off your brain, and read a trashy book about a girl falling in love with a 100-year-old vampire, okay? Yeah. And that is what Twilight has always been for me.
Exactly. I mean, I think for me, it's like, it just holds so much nostalgia that I'll just never be able to like hate it because,
exactly.
you know, I made so many memories with it and, you know, like it was really the foundation of a lot of my friendships with people. And I, you know, those memories are still very strong. So it's like, even though we can pick it apart and like question it and talk about how Edward's like probably not the ideal guy to date.
Oh God, no. 15-year-old Emily was like, where's my Edward Cullen? Adult Emily is like, get the fuck away from me and every girl I know because this is such an unhealthy relationship.
Yeah, exactly. So I think both can coexist.
Yes. We are allowed to read trash and know that it's not the best thing that's ever been written, but still enjoy it anyway.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to do something called Last Call.
I feel like we should ring a bell. You know, like when you're in a bar and they call Last Call and they ring the bell, it means this is your last chance.
Last call.
Last chance for a drink. But in this podcast, it means give us your best bad summary of what this book is about. Would you like to go first, Sarah?
Okay, I'll go
first. Should we make one together?
Teenage girl moves away from her mother to be a loner and complain until she falls in love.
Okay, my version is a teenage girl with very obvious daddy issues falls in love with a murderous psychopath and hangs out with his whole family, who are also murderers.
I think you win this. You win this round.
5 points to Slytherin.
You definitely win this round. We can keep a tally going every podcast.
Yes, please. We're going to keep, you get 5 points for winning Last Call.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's our first episode.
It is.
I think we've been talking for about 2 hours, but maybe we've only been recording for like an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I hope that you enjoyed listening to us ramble, getting progressively drunker on wine, talking about Twilight. Leave us a review. Tell us what your favorite memory is of when you read Twilight for the first time. Let's see if it tops putting a cardboard cutout of Edward over your bed as a seventh grader or performing an entire waltz by yourself while reading the climax of the first book.
Yes.
Our next episode, whenever we film it, is going to be all about New Moon. So join us, reread if you would like to. We'll see you next time with another bottle of wine and all of our unfiltered opinions about New Moon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Rewind is written and produced by Sarah Jones Dittmeyer and Emily Cavender. It's edited by Sarah Jones Dittmeyer. Music is by Mark Schwedo. Find us on TikTok at Rewind Podcast or on Instagram at Rewind_podcast.